This episode was recorded in May 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
You all right?
Yeah, just like you. I mean, good. To be fair, it's good and bad because the kids are here.
Yeah.
Oh God, so we're all locked down together. And my daughter's university, she's just qualified. So I kind of think it'd be the last time we're all together. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so there's that. But listen, here we go. Right, we're starting. Mick, how are you?
Oh, mate, I'm all right. I'm climbing the walls. But apart from that, you know, I'm still sane, I think.
Are you missing it?
Yeah. I didn't actually think I would miss it this much. Because I've got to that point where I can turn on and off games, you know, when you get to the last 20 minutes. But you just don't realise when you turn your TV on and there's no live football. It's absolutely crazy, and it does actually, it runs your life.
Yeah. Well, it runs your life because you're so heavily involved in it, aren't you? I mean, I can't turn on the radio, talk sport, without you either doing a studio show or you're at a live game.
Yeah, oh mate. Well, when it's in your blood, that's it. You want to be a part of it as much as you possibly can. And I'm no different to anybody else. I mean, the radio show, which is obviously great. I mean, I've been working for them for nearly 10 years now. And then your bits and bobs on TV. And obviously, I mean, I used to see a good self when we were in the Middle East in Qatar and we did the World Cup, etc., which was fantastic. And you just want those good times to come back, to be honest with you, any kind of football. But, you know, we always want to watch the best, the World Cups, the Euros, the Premier League. It's just special, and I think that's why it brings so many people together.
Listen, you say 10 years, obviously being in football a long time. Do you like football? I mean, we all love football. Like, do you like it as much as, say, you know, 20 years ago? I mean, I miss a good crunching tackle myself. Sometimes it gets a little bit tippy-tappy for me.
Yeah, Rob, I'm completely in your book there, mate, because when I watch it now, it's a different game. I think it's more business run. They're more professional. I think it's very difficult for the individual players when they come in front of camera to kind of tell you stories of maybe a night out where they've been with the rest of the group or things like that. But yeah, you're right. I think the physicality is completely changed. I think the love is kind of gone from the stands a little bit. You know, even the rule changes. I mean, I hate to bring it up so early in this conversation, but VAR, yeah. It's just ridiculous.
I think, listen, who knows what the world's going to be like after this lockdown. It would be, and I know this is absolutely fantasy, but it would be lovely. See, my view would be, wouldn't it be great if the Premier League, which has all this masses of amounts of money, actually started filtering a bit down. I mean, I was doing some work at Gillingham Football Club, and I know how tough, how hard people work, how tough it is to survive. You know, just a little drop of that to filter down. Because I think without competition, even in the Premier League, I think without competition, it loses something. You know, the big six, the big four, I think it takes away. That's my own view.
Well, it's like a separate league, Rob, isn't it? I think when you look at that, when you look at the top six, I mean, they're all chasing, obviously, those Champions League positions. But I think when you start to filter down the Premier League, and we're finding that out now, I mean, the finances, you talk to every other club and they've probably gone over their budgets because they need to stay in that Premier League so much because the amount of money that's available to them. But when you think about the funds that are available to the Premier League, I don't understand why they can't filter that down to the lower leagues. I mean, the Championship, most sides are okay because a lot of them have had the parachute money. I'm not saying all of them. And you've got the bottom of the table, teams like Charlton, who work on a really low budget. We spoke to Lee Bowyer about 2 weeks ago, and he was absolutely fantastic. He was top draw. But then, I mean, you go League One and League Two, and you can see why they find it so difficult just to run on a daily basis, not a weekly basis. So you can imagine what they're going through right now. They probably had the conversation, and this probably goes through to every one of the clubs, is how they can sustain the club and how they can keep it running. And it's not just the footballing side of things. You know, you think about the people who work behind closed doors, you know, the catering staff, the laundry people. It's incredible to think how difficult a time it is for them as well.
And Mike, I'm going right to the top end as well. The other thing that I vehemently don't like. I'm very passionate about the English leagues. That, you know, the Premier League all the way down. I hate to think of these European leagues. I'm not keen on the expansion of the Champions League. I don't want the big getting so big that everybody's left behind. And I fear it. I've got to be honest with you.
But you know what? I think it was a couple of years ago, Rob. Maybe even when I was working with yourself. I mean, they were talking for months and months about trying to set up a Super League. Basically, what you see is the Champions League right now. They wanted that as a regular thing throughout the whole of a season. And I think if you get that, you know, you take away the, let's say, the top four or the top six of even the Premier League, and you make this Super European League, if you want to put it like that, I think people have stopped watching Premier League football. I think you'll have a rebel against the top six sides where there's kind of there's a split between both, if you understand what I mean. And yeah, I'm completely on your side here because, you know, we need the top sides in the Premier League. Yes, sometimes there is a bit of a gulf, but you always get those crazy weeks, don't you, where bottom will be top. I mean, you have to go, what, 2.5 months ago when Watford absolutely thumped Liverpool? Nobody thought that was going to happen.
That's the beauty of the thing, isn't it? That's the beauty of it.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. And, you know, we always talk, and for many, many years, and we will when we're obviously gone from this world. The FA Cup, the third round, when you get the upsets, you know, you get a non-league side playing against a Premier League team. That doesn't happen too many times in any of the European sides. And that's why we love our football. This is why we're all so passionate about it in England, because it's just an incredible game. And that's why so many people want to play it. So many people want to be involved in it. And we're all supporters at the end of the day. You know, you want to see those huge upsets. And when it happens, it's what you talk about for weeks on end.
Tell me about your own career. Were you always going to be a footballer? Was that something that was it? That was all you wanted in your life?
Pretty much, to be honest with you. I think, you know, as you're growing up from probably the age of about 2 or 3 years old, I mean, you know, the ball's put in your hand and it's right, off you go. And I think in those days, and you relate to this as well, you know, it was more football in the streets with your mates and playing against garages or a brick wall and just getting outside, and you were there for hours on end until obviously the sun went down and your parents shouted you back into the house. And I think from that moment, you kind of get a gist of, you know, how good you are. And, you know, if you think you've got an opportunity of maybe turning professional, but you kind of start thinking about that when you're maybe about 13 or 14 years old in our day. Now the kids are getting signed up when they're 6 and 7 years old, which I don't agree with, but, you know, look, it's the way of the world. But yeah, you kind of say to yourself when you're playing with your mates and you're playing on Saturdays and Sundays, I'm a little bit better than them. And then basically what you're hoping for then after that is scouts maybe searching you and asking you, inviting you to go to different clubs. And that's the way it works. And it's such a great feeling when you get that opportunity. I mean, I was quite fortunate when I was a kid to go to Man United for 2 years. And still remember it to this day. It was incredible.
Who was there? Who were your peers at Man United?
Well, I was the class of 92, was the same age as me. So it was Scholesy, David Beckham, who I used to share digs with. There was about four or five of us. Giggsy was there, obviously called Ryan Wilson at the time. And then we had the Neville brothers, Nicky Butt. But there were so many other players that were coming through at the time. And they could only keep so many on, and it was just an incredible time. And I mean, you could see the talent. I mean, when I was the first day I went there and I was training, I mean, this is at 14 years old. Ryan was just, he was ready to play in the first team at 14. That's how good he was. I mean, they were just special players. And they were brilliant because every time he played against Man United after that, whichever club I was at, you know, there was always a nice handshake. There was a good 5-minute conversation. So I think the lads from that era never really forgot each other, which was great.
Let's jump forward to Sunderland, which is obviously your hometown team, your big passion. Does Reedy get underestimated sometimes in the mists of time? You forget Sunderland finished seventh 2 years running. I mean, it's just astonishing, isn't it?
I mean, the job he done, Rob, was just sensational. I mean, we had, I think it was 7 or 8 games when he first came into the club when we were at Roker Park, and we were getting relegated. No two ways about it. And he basically come in, and normally when a manager comes into a dressing room, it's a 10 or 15 minute chat with the players, what he expects from the players. And he can imagine the words that, I won't say them, but you can imagine the words that come out of Reedy's mouth within the space of a minute and a half. It was just brilliant. And I think everybody just fell in love with him from that moment. And from that day, training sessions, you could just sense it. They got sharper, they got better. There was a little bit more hunger in every individual player. And we stayed up that season. And then the following season after that, believe it or not, we got promoted. And we had the same group of players. But he was just, he had this passion about and this love for football. And I think he obviously earned that respect as soon as he walked in the dressing room. But he just had this knack of getting another 15% out of every player. And he was brilliant for me. I mean, the 7.5 years that he was there, he was just incredible. And I still obviously speak to him now.
Was he a manager you could talk to? Could you argue with? Would he accept your point of view?
You know, yeah, a bit of both, really. You could chat to him if you wanted to, if you had a problem. He was very good with all that stuff. But he basically just wanted the best for you. The other side of things, you know, if you wanted to, you know, he was probably better when he had a beer down him. Mm. You could sit and have a conversation with him. And if you wanted to chat to him about football, he'd be there for hours. And that was basically what he was like. And I think that's why everybody kind of related to him. He was just one of the lads. And that's what worked in Sunderland because, you know, it's a working class city and, you know, everybody wants the best and they just love their football. And I think bringing somebody in like Reedy, or the gaffer as I call him, it was a masterstroke, it really was.
What was your role? Did he give you a definite role? Did he give you freedom? Did he give you a license?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, every manager, you know, if they're lying, if they say they don't say that they give you drills to do, you know, when games are coming up, because obviously you work on that through the week. Probably starts on a Thursday where you're doing your tactical side of things. There was him and his sidekick, Bobby Saxton and Adrian Heath, Inchu, you know very well. They used to kind of do that side of things. But I think Reedy was basically stand on the touchlines. He got involved when he thought he needed to get involved. And I don't know what it was. I think, you know, we had great players in the dressing room. It was all about the camaraderie, I think, and that just brushed off on every individual player. And it was, right, well, if he can reach those levels, there's no reason why I can't. And it was running through brick walls. That was his that was his mindset, to be honest with you. And we all just related to everything that he said to us.
Who were the big personalities in that dressing room?
Well, Quinny obviously springs to mind straight away. You know, big character. I think he was probably, at the time, was probably the only named player in our side, to be honest with you. You know, we were kind of has-beens or people who wanted to be somebody. So Quinny was very vocal in the dressing room. You know, he was the one who kind of worked on the camaraderie side of things, not just on the field, but off the field as well. You know, we were a tight group. We all stuck together. And obviously our captain, who I love him to pieces, you know, Kevin Ball, who, you know, if you talk to people around the country, then maybe not everybody doesn't know him, you know, but what he gave to Sunderland and how passionate he was, I've never seen it. I've never witnessed it before. And, you know, we used to walk through the dressing room to go onto the football field at Roker Park before every home game, and he used to bang the door 3 times. I felt sorry for the door.
What's that feeling like when you're in a team where you just like, Blimey, we're good. I mean, it's success breeds confidence. Confidence comes from the success, and but it must be a great feeling when you're standing there thinking, do you know, we're going to turn these over today.
Yeah, and that was what we had, Rob. I mean, we used to stand in the tunnel before kickoff, and managers used to say to you then, don't look at the opposition. Well, I think Reedy used to say the opposite. He used to say, look them in the eye and see how they're feeling before the game kicks off. So you're in the tunnel, and because we were playing well and we were absolutely flying, pretty much winning every single game, we used to look across and you could see a little bit of fear in their eyes. And then they walked through that tunnel at the stadium alight and they just heard the atmosphere. And we were kind of 1-0 up. That's how it felt in our promotion season from the Championship when we got over 100 points. And we actually took that feeling into the Premier League. And it was the same thing, you know, I'd heard so many times about from players and other managers about not looking at who you were playing against. And I think the only time it really got to us was probably when we played against Man United. And you've been brought up looking at your heroes and players who you admire. I mean, one of them being obviously Giggsy, who I knew as a kid and stuff. But I think it was the Cantona era when he used to walk down that tunnel with his collars up, and you kind of tried not to look at him, but there was like a mad naked field who just like pulled your head across to one side just to see how he acted as he walked down that tunnel. And
brilliant.
We're in for one today.
Who's the toughest out and out, say, winger, or who was your toughest opponent? Or who did you fight?
So many, Rob. I mean, over the years, I mean, you come across so many different players and they have different strengths. If I'll go straight to the top, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean, for obvious reasons, but I mean, I probably played against him when he used to do 4,000 step overs before he actually got to you. his game's adapted a little bit since then, but I actually played against him 3 times and I won 3 times.
Wow.
Yeah, we did the double over them at Blackburn, which was incredible. It had not been done for 90-odd years from a Blackburn side of things. And I played against him another time when I was at Blackburn and I got the better of him then. So that's my little bit of a claim to fame. But he was just one of them, Rob, if I'm honest with you. I mean, Beckham, I don't know if he's underrated or people think he was or they didn't think he was as quick as people thought he might be. But I have to say, his brain and his knowledge of just being able to get half a yard. And once he had that half a yard, you've seen his crossing over the years. He was an incredible player and worked as hard as any player that I've ever come against.
After Sunderland, obviously you were Celtic, you're at Blackburn. You've had some amazing managers. Who else, apart from Reedy, stands out for you? I mean, you got the likes of Martin O'Neill, you got Graham Souness, of course, Mick McCarthy. Who did you get on with? Who got the best out of you from that group?
Well, definitely some of the names that you've just mentioned there. I mean, in their own way, they had their own philosophy of how they wanted to manage their teams. When I went to Celtic, as we were speaking before about Peter Reid, he'd put his arm around you, he'd have a laugh and a joke with you, he'd ask what you were doing or what you got up to on Saturday night, etc. Whereas Martin was the complete opposite. He was Mr. Silent, if you like. He never really got involved in training. He used to watch from the sidelines. He used to walk into the dressing room before...
Because he said the same yesterday when he was at Leicester.
He said exactly the same.
Exactly the same thing, yeah.
Oh, mate, it was incredible. I mean, he just had this aura about him when he walked into a room. He owned the room, Martin. And I think because of the success that they had at Celtic for many years, and obviously I jumped in the middle of that, he walked into the dressing room 5 minutes before, let's say an hour and a half before kickoff to tell you the team. And he had this little piece of paper in front of him. He'd just read out the surnames of all the players. And if you were on that, you were like, great, okay, I'm in the team. And then he'd just turn around, go back out the door, and you wouldn't see him again until about 2 or 3 minutes before kickoff. And then he'd come in and just give you this almighty speech. It was gladiator-esque. It was incredible every single week. Didn't matter who you were playing against. And obviously, I mean, Celtic was, the big game for everybody. And he used to say this speech. And my goodness, you couldn't wait to get onto the field to play for somebody like Martin. And that was his way of managing. And it was fantastic. And then on the other side, Blackburn was a little bit more mellow, believe it or not, with somebody like Graham Souness in charge.
Really? That might surprise people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Graham, he could flip. There's no doubt about it. But I think out of all the managers that I worked under, he was definitely the most approachable. His door was always open, conversation-wise. Yeah, he wanted to know about your family, etc. Away from things about football, what your hobbies, etc. He always had time for you, Graham. And I really respected that while he was at Blackburn. It was kind of a short period of time, to be honest with you, because he moved to Newcastle and then Mark Hughes came in. And again, Mark... I mean, you think about Mark as a player, tenacious, as nasty as they come as a centre-forward. You take him off the football field and he's a very quiet man. And, his door wasn't never open, but if you knocked on it to go in, it was always difficult to have a conversation with Mark. But he was winning every week and he built a fantastic team. So everybody's got their own ways.
Yeah.
Out of all those managers, yeah, it's very difficult to pick one who, stands out. They were all amazing guys.
I suppose one of the things you can always look back on is you played for England.
Mm. Yeah, when it came around, I mean, didn't expect it at all. I mean, I was playing Championship football at the time. But it was on the back of a season where we'd got 105 points or 106, I think, at the time, which was a record. It's been broken since by Reading. And come the end of the season, Kevin had scored about 30, Kevin Phillips had scored about 35, 40 goals. And I knew I was playing well. I'd been obviously interested in watching the England games. And Graeme Lassalle was there. Stuart Pearce was involved. He was coming to the end of his career. And I just thought, you know, are they any better than I am? But you can only say that to yourself. You know, we start bragging about things like that. People think you're a big head, et cetera. And out the blue, it came and they were all talk about Kevin Phillips getting in the England squad. And then I think it was the Thursday before we were playing our final game of the season. I got a phone call from Kevin Keegan at home. I think this was probably before mobile phones, Rob. So I think the house phone went. And I thought it was an impersonator. Somebody coming on the phone pretending to be Kevin Keegan. So me being a bit of a lad, you know, a northeast boy, you know, I'm like, without the swear words, you're winding me up here, aren't you? He was like, no, it's Kevin Keegan, Michael. And I was like, the more I listened to his voice, I was like, this is Kevin Keegan.
Yeah.
And he was like, Michael, great news. Look, he said, you've had an incredible season. You've got yourself into the England squad. We want you to come and meet up, et cetera. And then it was like, wow. You know, then it hit me. And then you go to the training ground and the media and the press are all over. There's people with England shirts wanting you to wear them with a photograph, etc. And I just looked at Kevin Phillips and remember I was like, is this actually happening? But, mate, brilliant, brilliant memory. And, you know, I loved every minute of obviously getting my debut when I rocked up and made my debut for my country.
They say it's a step up. I guess the step up is that just the whole media attention, isn't it? That, you know, the whole country's focus. I guess that's probably the hardest bit of all.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, there's no doubt. You know, you're in the spotlight, and there's no hiding away from it, Rob. I mean, that's basically what happens is when you get called up to your country. And from turning up on that day, you know, there's people hanging around. There's people want photographs, as I mentioned before. You know, there's media want to talk to you. It's just 24/7 and there's no respite until the game comes around. And that's pretty much your freedom, to be honest with you. I mean, first game was Hungary, which I was involved in. And I wasn't expecting to start the game or anything. I mean, I was just praying for a minute just to get onto the field and wear the three lions. And I got 17 minutes at the end of the game. We drew the game 0-0, I think, against Hungary. And I mean, just to have those 17 minutes was incredible. But after that, and you get the feeling of and the buzz around the place, you want more of it.
Sure. Listen, we've been lucky, haven't we, with you know, chatting to the likes of Graeme Souness in much more informal circumstances with Kevin Keegan. Does the relationship change, or do you still have that he's the gaffer kind of feel? Because I do. Yeah. I do. I try my best, but I do.
I think once somebody's been your manager, there's always respect there. You know, you might see but somebody from another manager, let's for instance, I don't know, Jose Mourinho was obviously never manager of mine. You know, you respect him from afar. But yeah. I think once you've had somebody in charge of it and you realise what they've actually done in the game, like Peter Reid, like Kevin Keegan, like Graeme Souness, the respect's there from the first second you meet them, whether they're your manager or whether, you know, there's somebody who you've worked with in the media, etc. And they've just got this aura. I mean, I don't know if you feel like that. When I was working...
I do with all bosses, yeah. There's still that relationship. Even when it finished and you're sort of socialising, whatever, I still... It's sometimes... I mean, Kenny Dalglish is my one. He was obviously my idol.
Legend.
I've played golf with him. I've interviewed him and I've been out for dinner with him. I've tried, but it's still that you know... Still a farrier, if you like.
You've got to watch your P's and Q's, haven't you?
Yeah.
You don't want them to think bad of you. But I think even, you know, like when you're interviewing them, you know, when we were working in Qatar for BeIN Sports, when you're interviewing them, you're probably thinking in the back of your mind, should I ask this question? Or will he take it the wrong way? Or if he stares at me in a funny way, I know I've done something wrong with you. It's like you're the naughty little schoolboy, aren't you? And
that's the feel
when they've been your managers. It's incredible.
Listen, I know you like your fitness. Have you been able to get out? And I saw the 5K. What was your time for that?
Oh, mate, I was disappointed. I did 21 minutes and 10 seconds, I think it was.
That's good. Okay. That's good.
Yeah, but in me pomp when I was running, when I finished retiring, I did 18 minutes and 10.
Wow.
So I'm 3 minutes away from that, and it's so hard to get back to it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've ran every other day, so I run a day, then I have a day's rest. But I've got myself up to just under 8K at the minute, which I'm doing in about 34 minutes. But I'm quite happy
Brilliant.
With that.
Brilliant.
Before we get out of lockdown, I'm determined I'm going to get under 20 minutes. I'll do it, mate.
Listen, also, the last one for you. I mean, you obviously get involved in trips and all that with old teams and what have you. You you did the England-Scotland one in Dubai that Derek White has run for so long now. That's a cracker, isn't it?
Oh, mate, the reason why we keep going back every single year is because the group of lads are just absolutely fantastic. Derek puts on a great gig for us. I mean, everybody looks after us at the hotel. They put events on and Q&As, and obviously you've been involved in them, having the after-dinner speaking, etc. So you know how good they are. I think this was the 9th year, so the next year is obviously 10 years, and we're going to be celebrating that. And we've got to win that one. Scotland did us this year, which I was pretty gutted about. I think Derek had us over, to be honest with you. They had about 9 pros, and we had 4, and 2 of them didn't. So there was me and Leanne running around everywhere, trying to score goals, etc. It was in goal at one point, I think. So he's done us... Next year, mate, we're up for it. I've been on the case already. I've got about 6 or 7 more pros, English players who want to come.
Yeah, you need a few. You need.
No, don't you worry about that. We ain't losing again, mate. Let me tell you.
Hey, Mick, lovely talking to you, my friend. Take care of yourself. Keep running, and we'll catch up soon.
Don't mind, Rob. You keep safe. Take care, mate. Bye, pal.
See you, pal. Cheers.